We are back now, basing our operation here at NBC in New York, bringing you reports from all over the country, indeed from all over the world, on this momentous day when we have lost the president and had another one installed. In about 4 or 5 minutes, if the plane is on schedule, Air Force One is expected to land at Andrews Air Force Base just outside Washington. On the plane will be the body of President Kennedy, will be President Lyndon Johnson, Mrs. Johnson, Mrs. Kennedy. President Johnson is expected to have something to say at the airport to the American people. There has been no public quotation from him as yet. Understandably, even as the rest of the nation, Mr. Johnson is trying to assemble his thoughts, trying to accustom himself to what has happened to the country and to him. He will officially move into the actions of being president later this evening. He will meet at the White House with Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara, Presidential Advisor McGeorge Bundy, who was so very close to President Kennedy, will also meet with Mr. Johnson. And following that meeting, there will be a meeting with a bipartisan congressional delegation. The leaders from both parties will come to the White House. And undoubtedly, it's simply a question of saying there may be political differences between us, but we are all Americans, and we will all work together for what we feel is best for this country. Frank?
Just to Andrews Air Force Base in Washington and Robert Abernathy of NBC News.
We are at Andrews Air Force Base waiting for the plane to arrive here. Several thousand people.
You're on the speaker.
Several thousand people waiting for the president to arrive at Andrews Air Force Base.
We are here, members of Congress have arrived. The leaders of both the Senate and the House are here.
Here is the plane now. Made the flight back from Dallas. Plane coming in here at Andrews Air Force Base, just outside Washington.
The president was dead momentarily. The lights went out here at the Air Force Base. The hundreds of reporters couldn't see anything.
Cabinet officers, diplomats, senators, congressmen. This tragedy. Come out here in the dark. And on our guard now, walking up to the tail of the presidential jet.
They're from Moline Air Force Base, where the regular honor guard that usually dispatches the president as well as welcomes him when he returns to Washington. An Army helicopter has just landed, making a great deal of noise.
You see is a special truck that has been moved up to the rear of the presidential jet, a special truck on which the coffin will be brought out. A helicopter is standing by just near the presidential jet to take the coffin away.
The men are now struggling with the casket. It appears to be the casket, struggling to get it out of the plane. The bright, shiny casket glistening in the lights here at the airport.
Casket rocket is a dark brown in color, slightly reddish. It looks as if it's bronze.
Slowly marches away from the plane, leaving room for the elevator-like apparatus that is now being lowered into a box. The apparatus is coming down now.
The ambulance is being drawn up just near the truck, which lowers the casket from the plane. It is our understanding here that the body will be flown by helicopter from here, possibly to Bethesda Naval Hospital.
Other senators have reported that the body will be taken by helicopter straight to the White House. There is some difference of opinion as to the exact plan. Jacqueline Kennedy. To her right is her brother-in-law, the Attorney General Robert Kennedy. They are helping her down out of that carrier that has just brought down the casket.
Kennedy is apparently getting into the ambulance, the Navy ambulance, with the casket.
It was a very steep step that she had to jump down to get on the floor. Aides helped her do it. She was helped also by her brother-in-law, the Attorney General Robert Kennedy.
President Lyndon Johnson and Lady Bird Johnson are standing just near the door in the rear of the presidential jet, waiting.
Mrs. Lyndon Johnson is holding the new president's hand.
The Navy ambulance moves off with the casket.
The ambulance is going to the other side of this airport. It is supposed to deliver the casket to the helicopters that are standing by.
Past the Guard of Honor, a cordon of soldiers, airmen lining the field here, and behind them thousands of young airmen from Andrews Air Force Base who have come here up to the fence to see.
Secret Service man comes down the steps of the airplane. Now, new President Lyndon Baines Johnson with his wife Lady Bird. They're coming down the steps. They are followed by Johnson aides, including Mrs. Carpenter, Mr. Phil Moyers, former Congressman Homer Thornberry,
the Secret Service on the president's right. Secretary McNamara and other officials greeting the new president. As he moves now in the direction of an Army helicopter.
That was Secretary McNamara, I think, who just leaned over and affectionately kissed Mrs. Johnson. We have heard that Lyndon Johnson, the new president, was going to make a speech here tonight on arrival. The microphones are set up. He appears to be walking toward them now. These microphones are just about 4 feet back from an encased area for the press. Of the leaders of both parties, both houses of Congress, to meet with him at the White House tonight at 7:15.
Senator Durkin said earlier this evening, he thought the plans of Congress would depend on precisely when the funeral is. Many, many members want to go to Boston for the funeral. But he said he did not feel that Congress would adjourn or recess because of
President is still talking with leaders of the Senate. Mrs. Maureen Mansfield is there with Senator Mansfield, the Democratic Senate leader. Mrs. Mansfield was weeping before, as were many of the women who came out here to the airport. The Office of Protocol tells us that almost every embassy in town called the State Department today to find out the plans so that they could be here when the plane arrived at Andrews Air Force Base.
Now President Johnson is moving towards the Army helicopter for the flight to the White House, where he has a meeting scheduled tonight with Secretary McNamara and McGeorge Bundy, other officials.
He's shaking hands now with Bill Moyers, one of his aides who was with him during the campaign and who has been with him in most of his activities for the past several years. One of the people who came out here was Senator Aiken, who said I'm just beginning to realize what happened. President Johnson needs our help. Chief of Protocol Andrew Biddle Duke was out here meeting President Lyndon Johnson.
This entire ceremony here has been hastily improvised. Telephone circuits, all planned, put together very quickly.
The Secret Service handled all the arrangements of the late president's body and the arrangements for President Lyndon Johnson's arrival. The Air Force Base itself, the Air Force handled all the many other details that were necessary at a time like this. The helicopter bearing new President Lyndon Johnson is about to take off.
Now the Army helicopter preparing to take off. The rotors beginning. Take off for the short flight from Andrews Etz Air Force Base outside Washington to the south lawn of the White House in downtown Washington.
Inside the helicopter, you can see aides talking in animated, very concentrated conversation. President Lyndon Baines Johnson is his wife, Lady Bird, who is always at his side. He has been with him in his long road up the political ladder from the days he started out from Stonewall, Texas. Is now disappearing from the field. Press dignitaries are moving away. The plane, the presidential plane, the United States of America, it bears no other insignia but that. There, the baggage is being taken off, hastily packed. Now, the 55-year-old Lyndon Baines Johnson. This is on his way to the White House, the first time he will enter the White House as president.
Thus, the arrival in Washington, the body of the late President John F. Kennedy, and President Lyndon B. Johnson. President Johnson walked off the aircraft rather slowly, his wife beside him. He walked up to a cluster of microphones and said, "This is a sad time for all people." Speaking of the death of the president, he said, "It's a loss that cannot be weighed," called it a deep personal loss. Then President Johnson said, "I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's." That is all he had to say. We are told that the president's body, which was removed from the aircraft first in casket, placed in a naval ambulance, will be taken to Bethesda Naval Hospital, and that tomorrow the president's body will lie in the east room of the White House. There are no announced plans for any public viewing of the president's body. There will be none tomorrow. Members of the family, top officials of the government, members of Congress, and members of the diplomatic corps will go to the White House tomorrow at specified times to pay their respects to the late John F. Kennedy. President Johnson is on his way to the White House now. Later this evening, he will meet with Defense Secretary McNamara, with McGeorge Bundy, the presidential advisor, and then with the leaders of both parties from the House and the Senate for discussions. He was met at the airport by members of Congress, and the Mansfield was there, as was Senator Dirksen, the Republican leader in the Senate. President Johnson looked extremely severe, extremely shaken by what he had gone through, as did his wife, Mrs. Johnson, standing by his side as he spoke his first public words as President of the United States, the 36th President. He had been sworn in only about 2.5 to 3 hours earlier by a federal judge in the executive suite of the aircraft in which he arrived at Andrews Air Force Base, in the executive suite of Air Force One, sworn in with his wife and Mrs. Kennedy and as many White House aides as could be crowded into that suite looking on as Federal Judge Sarah Hughes administered the oath of office to Lyndon Baines Johnson. And so, events which started swiftly, completely unexpectedly and shockingly in Dallas only a matter of about 5 hours ago have gone virtually full circle. The President and the late President are, in a sense, back home, back in the nation's capital. The business of running and governing this nation will go on. Frank?
The helicopter is now on its way to the White House. This recent innovation in United States procedures involving the chief executive is carrying the new President of the United States from Andrews Air Force Base to the White House, where he will now fill out the remainder of John F. Kennedy's term. The term will expire January 20th, 1964. There is, at a time like this, a thirst for detail, as everyone wants to know, and reasonably so, every facet of every part of the story, while fully cognizant that no amount of detail will satisfy, because the simple, brutal shock of the incident itself is what is impelling the attention. And coming as it did, and in a remote part of the country, not in the sense of being so terribly far away, but where the normal facilities that are available to White House staff and crew are strained to their utmost, all arrangements, of course, have had to be improvised, and we're not aware of all the details of the incident as yet, nor are we fully informed on what will transpire from this point on. The simple fact is, the President of the United States has been shot and assassinated, and the new President of the United States is Lyndon Baines Johnson. The body has been returned to Washington. The new President is in Washington, is on his way to the White House at this moment. He will meet later in the evening with the Democratic leaders of Congress. We can expect that for the next 2 or 3 days, we will be kept abreast of what is happening, and that within hours they will have managed to get themselves in position in Washington where the transition could be made as smoothly as possible. Former Vice President Richard Nixon is among those who have made some comment on the President's death today. Mr. Nixon said, "The assassination of the President is a terrible tragedy for the nation. Mrs. Nixon and I have sent a personal message expressing our deepest sympathy to the members of the family in this hour of sorrow." This is a statement from former Vice President Richard Nixon.
So this, too, Frank, it's announced that the United States Navy ships and land stations throughout the world will fire salutes in tribute to President Kennedy every half hour between 8 a.m. and sunset tomorrow. I imagine that would be local time, wherever the ships and stations are. Of course, the President was in the Navy during World War II. Flags on all ships and stations will be flown at half-staff for 30 days, the Navy announcement said. It's rather ironic and strange that this man should have endured so much in World War II, should have come so close to losing his life in the famous incident involving his PT boat, then should come home and lose his life in Dallas, Texas, in a completely unbelievable fashion. The new President of the United States is approaching his residence, the White House. A report from there from NBC's Robert Gorowski at the White House.
The first of the helicopters from Andrews Air Force Base has just landed here on the south lawn of the White House. It's about a 7-minute step from Andrews Air Force Base to the White House. Vice President Johnson, President Johnson, I'm sure that many of us have made that mistake and will repeat it many times. President Johnson will shortly emerge from the helicopter to the White House. Immediately after he enters the Executive Mansion, he will have a meeting with Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara and other presidential advisors, McGeorge Fundy. The President is about to step off the helicopter now. President Lyndon Johnson appearing at the White House for the first time. There is Mrs. Johnson and the President stepping down from the helicopter. Walking across the south lawn of the White House to the south portico, the President is now talking to his special secret service man, previously the head of the Vice Presidential Detail. President Johnson will meet with Secretary of Defense McNamara and McGeorge Fundy almost immediately. That is Secretary of Defense McNamara now talking to Mrs. Johnson. Now they walk under the south portico where they will go into conference at 8 o'clock this evening. About an hour and a half from now, President Johnson will meet with the leadership, Democrats and Republicans of the Congress. It had been reported that Mrs. Kennedy was on Air Force One, the presidential plane that carried President Johnson and the body of former President Kennedy from Dallas to Washington. It's not yet known exactly what Vice President Johnson will do in moving to change the personnel of the White House. Undoubtedly, he will keep many of the personnel who served under Mr. Kennedy. There are many changes that will take place, perhaps in the congressional line of action. But President Johnson, with his broad leadership as the Senate Majority Leader for many years, has had perhaps more experience with the Senate of the United States and the Congress of the United States than any president who has served in quite some time. He's a veteran of Capitol Hill activities. In the East Room of the White House, beginning at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, the body of former President Kennedy will lie in repose. Lie in repose is a term indicating it will be private as opposed to a public lying in state. The other helicopters are now landing up the White House on the south lawn. They too are arriving from Andrews Air Force Base. President Johnson and Mrs. Johnson have entered the White House. This is the first time they will have entered the Executive Mansion as President and First Lady of the United States. There are small crowds outside the White House, extra police detail. Details have been put on in case there should be many people turning out to see the new president arriving here. Cars are, however, blocking Pennsylvania Avenue. They're going very, very slowly. They're attempting to move cars as rapidly as possible. The meeting, presumably, will get underway immediately. This is the meeting with President Johnson and Secretary of Defense McNamara and McGeorge Fundy. This is Robert Goralski, NBC News, reporting from the White House.
Darkness has settled on the eastern part of the United States. John F. Kennedy, who departed the White House Thursday morning as President of the United States, has returned the victim of an assassin in Dallas, Texas. The man suspected of having committed this offense is under arrest. His name is Lee Oswald. He is now being investigated and interrogated by federal and state authorities in Texas. The new president of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson, has arrived with the First Lady at the White House. He will spend the night there. All of NBC's programs for the remainder of this evening and until further notice have been canceled in order that we might keep you completely and fully and immediately abreast of all the developments in this tragedy. Expressions of regret have been heard from around the world. They will not suffice. The President of the United States is dead. We have a new president. And NBC's Chet Hutley and David Brinkley have prepared a special 90-minute program which we will bring you immediately following this break for station identification.
Sidewalk beside the open door of NBC News reporter Gabe Pressman's automobile, listening to the loudspeaker, the car radio. They had known for some minutes that the president was gravely wounded. Then came the instant when the worst was confirmed.
A flash from Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead.
A bullet wound. This is the latest information we have from Dallas. Of course, standing by to give you all available information as it comes to us. I will repeat with the greatest regret this flash. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he has died of bullet wounds.
Find it hard to believe.
There was a stunned silence and a groping to come to terms with a fact that was almost beyond belief. The face and voice of a young girl summed it up.
I really can't say. Really, right now I just don't know what to do. I don't even know where to go, what to say. Nothing.
The assassination took place in Dallas as President Kennedy rode in the cavalcade toward the trademark where he was to have luncheon and make a speech. This is what happened, beginning shortly before the shots were fired. The voice is that of Charles Murphy of station WBAP, Fort Worth.
This was a scene near the Stemmons Expressway. In front, no, this is in front of City Hall in downtown Dallas, a mile east of the shooting scene. Heavy crowds line the downtown street to view the presidential party. As in all of the Texas stops, there were many teenagers attracted there by the First Lady and the President. This is Main Street in Dallas. Is this moving west? This is moving west toward the fatal moment. The motorcade is traveling at about 20 to 25 miles an hour, slowly westward down Main Street in the heart of Dallas. The time, about 12:20, during the noon hour, heavy crowds of downtown officers lining the route. That looks like the school depository building on the right. I'm not sure. This is the scene of confusion. Something has happened here. The cameraman running toward the scene to the presidential car ahead of him. We caught just a blurred glance of the old school depository building from which the sniper fired the shot. This is the reaction from the crowd. All is confusion at the scene. Here a woman shelters herself. Now racing toward the hospital. On Stemmons Freeway, past the trademark to the right, where the president was to have spoken, where he was to have criticized the fanatical right. Yeah, that is Parkland Hospital, a mile and a half to 2 miles from the shooting scene. Parkland Hospital, where the president died. No. By the time these films were shot, of course, the presidential car was already at the hospital. This is Major General Clifton, the military aide of the president. The secretary is going in the hospital.
That was silent film of the events along the presidential line of ride, immediately surrounding the fatal moment and described later by reporter Murphy. Thousands had massed 10 and 12 deep along the curb to see the President of the United States. The assassination happened so swiftly, and the motorcade sped off so quickly that few saw it actually taking place. A Dallas man had taken his small son to see the President. Here he tells what he saw.
Unfortunately, I was probably 15 to 20 feet away from the President when it happened.
Tell us exactly what you saw, sir.
He was coming down the street, and my 5-year-old boy and myself were by ourselves on the grass there on Palmer Street, and I asked Joe to wave to him, and Joe waved, and I waved, and the man.
That's all right, sir.
He was waving back. He was. The shot rang out, and he slumped down in the seat, and his wife reached up toward him, and he was slumping down, and the second shot went off, and it just knocked him down in the seat.
Two shots.
Did you see the man who did this?
No, sir, I did not see the man who did it. All I did was look in the man's face when he was shot there and saw that expression on his face and grabbed himself and slide. And the second one, whenever it went, why, I'm positive it hit him. I hope it didn't, but I'm positive that it hit him, and he went all the way down in the car. Then they speeded up, and I didn't know what was going on, so I just grabbed the boy and fell on him, and hopefully there wasn't a maniac around. I'm sorry. I can't help you more, but I will forget.
It's a logical assumption that hatred, far left, far right, political, religious, economic, or paranoid, moved the person or persons who today committed this combined act of murder and national sabotage. There is in this country, and there has been for too long, an ominous and sickening popularity of hatred. The body of the president lying at this moment in Washington is the thundering testimonial of what hatred comes to and the revolting excesses it perpetrates. Hatred is self-generating, contagious, it feeds upon itself and explodes into violence. It is no inexplicable phenomenon that there are pockets of hatred in our country, areas and communities where the disease is permitted or encouraged or given status by those who can and do influence others. You and I have heard in recent months someone say, those Kennedys ought to be shot. A well-known national magazine recently carried an article saying Chief Justice Warren should be hanged. In its own defense, it said it was only joking, but the left has been equally bad. Tonight, it might be the hope and the resolve of all of us that we've heard the last of this kind of talk, jocular or serious, for the result is tragically the same. David?
In Washington, where everything revolves around the government, this is a company town, really, and where the president is more than any one person revolves around him, and where, in many cases, the grief day was personal among people who knew him and worked for him. Here are a few pictures, rather random in nature, of some of the sights around Washington today. Flags on embassies, as well as on all other public buildings, at half staff. That, incidentally, is the Russian embassy. This is Lafayette Park, immediately across Pennsylvania Avenue from the White House, where as soon as the first news came out, people began to gather and stand, as they often do. Just stand. The police roped off the sidewalk immediately in front of the White House. St. Matthew's Cathedral is a few blocks from the White House.
I rushed up to the chair and said, Senator Kennedy, your brother, the president, has been shot. He gave a jerk to his body. His body tensed, but he was absolutely calm. And as I recall, Senator Kennedy, then presiding over the Senate, and he heard this awful news, said no. And that was all.
That was Robert Riddell, a member of the staff of the U.S. Senate, who took the news here to Senator Kennedy, Ted Kennedy, who is here with his sister Eunice, leaving in a helicopter for Andrews Base, where they then took a jet plane to Otis Air Force Base in Massachusetts. Now some comments from members of the Senate.
We knew him and loved him in West Virginia. I think he loved us. Mountaineers can hardly express their sadness at his going, and this afternoon I hope in just these few rather faltering words I can speak at least in part for the people of my state.
This good, this decent, this kindly man, this harassed man who had so much on his shoulders, and received from some people so little in the way of support in return, this man has now gone to his reward.
There are some things that are simply incredible and leave one absolutely speechless. This is one of them.
John Fitzgerald Kennedy was 46 years old last May. He had been president since January 20th, 1961. He was born to wealth. He was devoted to the public service. The administration of John F. Kennedy began with these inaugural words.
Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. This much we pledge and more. To those old allies whose cultural and spiritual origins we share, we pledge the loyalty of faithful friends. United, there is little we cannot do in a host of cooperative ventures. Divided, there is little we can do, for we dare not meet a powerful challenge at odds and split asunder. To those new states whom we welcome to the ranks of the free, we pledge our word that one form of colonial control shall not have passed away merely to be replaced by a far more iron tyranny. We shall not always expect to find them supporting our view, but we shall always hope to find them strongly supporting their own freedom. And to remember that in the past, those who foolishly sought power by riding the back of the tiger ended up inside. To those people in the huts and villages of half the globe, struggling to break the bonds of vast misery, we pledge our best efforts to help them help themselves. For whatever period is required, not because the communists may be doing it, not because we seek their vote, but because it is right. If a free society cannot help the many who are poor, it cannot save the few who are rich. To our sister republic, south of our border, we offer a special pledge to convert our good words into good deeds, in a new alliance for progress, to assist free men and free government in casting off the chains of poverty. This peaceful revolution of hope cannot become the prey of hostile powers. Let all our neighbors know that we shall join with them to oppose aggression or subversion anywhere in the Americas. And let every other power know that this hemisphere intends to remain the master of its own house.
Crises were not long delayed. Precisely 3 months after entering the White House, the president stood before the nation to acknowledge the Bay of Pigs fiasco. There followed the first trip to Europe and an inconclusive meeting with Khrushchev in Vienna. The Berlin issue grew more intense through those summer weeks of 1961. And on the night of August 12th, the communists built the Berlin Wall, and the president elected not to respond with force. A few days later, on August 16th, the Alliance for Progress was announced in the White House before a gathering of Latin American diplomats. In December, the president paid a visit to Latin America. 1962 is the year of trial. In April, the president faced off with the steel industry and a sizable section of the American business community. That autumn, a Negro youth by the name of James Meredith attempted to enter the University of Mississippi, and it required the action of the president to get him in and keep him there safely. In October, President Kennedy issued notice on Premier Khrushchev to remove his missiles and other big weapons from Cuba. The president led us to look for a few hours squarely at the possibility of nuclear war with these words.
My fellow citizens, let no one doubt that this is a difficult and dangerous effort on which we have set out. No one can foresee precisely what course it will take or what cost or casualties will be incurred. Many months of sacrifice and self-discipline lie ahead, months in which both our patience and our will be tested, months in which many threats and denunciations will keep us aware of our dangers. But the greatest danger of all would be to do nothing. The path we have chosen for the present is full of hazards, as all paths are. But it is the one most consistent with our character and courage as a nation and our commitments around the world. The cost of freedom is always high, but Americans have always paid it. And one path we shall never choose, and that is the path of surrender or submission. Our goal is not the victory of might, but the vindication of right. Not peace at the expense of freedom, but both peace and freedom here in this hemisphere, and we hope around the world. God willing, that goal will be achieved. Thank you and good night.
We are confronted primarily with a moral issue. It is as old as the scriptures and is as clear as the American Constitution. The heart of the question is whether all Americans are to be afforded equal rights and equal opportunities, whether we are going to treat our fellow Americans as we want to be treated. If an American, because his skin is dark, cannot eat lunch in a restaurant open to the public, if he cannot send his children to the best public school available, if he cannot vote for the public officials who represent him, if, in short, he cannot enjoy the full and free life which all of us want, then who among us would be content to have the color of his skin changed and stand in his place? Who among us would then be content with the counsels of patience and delay? 100 years of delay have passed since President Lincoln freed the slaves, yet their heirs, their grandsons, are not fully free. They are not yet free from the bonds of injustice,